independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
It is Friday. It is the day after we decided that Assad is a big meanie. And we launched, what about, are they saying, is it, how many was it, 70?
I heard 59 and I heard 60.
All right, so it was a bunch. It was a whole, it was definitely a bunch of them. We'll classify them as a whole lot of Tomahawk missiles in response to earlier in the week and the gas attack or the chemical attack on civilians. Jim Kennedy joins us from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. Jim, a lot of people are not thrilled by this who are big supporters of him because they said, hey, you said you were going to be kind of an isolationist. What the hell are you doing?
Well, no, that's true because, you know, those are people that are that were looking for one of the parts of where they liked Trump was his policies of, you know, the world, America's not the world's policeman. We're going to focus on making America great again, not expanding democracy into the Middle East, a la George W. Bush. So for those people, they're upset with him. But I think overall, the response, even the Democrats have been happy with this. So all in all, those people aren't going to go away from Trump because they're dedicated to Trump. They live for Trump. So I think he's going to be fine in the long run. And he's made a lot of people on the left somewhat happy by the fact that he is standing up to Assad, which is something a previous administration did not do.
You know, that's one of the things I like to remind people. Look, the reason that we're in this mess is the last two administrations jacked the pooch. We tried to nation build, which you cannot do. And then we had the last guy who was pretty apathetic towards any of this stuff and really thought, eh, somebody else's war. I really don't want to deal with it. So the quicker I can get this stuff, you know, handled and get us out of there, the better it's going to be. So, you know, there, it's not his fault. I think he handled it the right way.
No, I think he did fine. I mean, you're putting, it's a perfect response because it is measured, but you're also are pretty much not endangering any American lives. You're launching a bunch of Tomahawk missiles 800 miles into an area which there are no Americans into. So you're not going to put Americans at risk. You're going to, these are pretty reliable and pretty accurate weapons. You're going to hit what you're looking for, and they can do a pretty well job of minimizing collateral damage. So they're pretty much a win-win-win across the board.
The Russians, I said yesterday, look, there was three, potentially four messages sent here. It wasn't just about what we did. Messages were sent to Putin. Messages were sent to the Iranians. Messages were definitely sent to North Korea, what with China in town with this. And, of course, message was sent to Assad that that's old guy, new guy, do something totally different. And people are still, you know, they still feel like that this was a false flag and that we're going to start nation building. I think we just sent a message. That's it. Sometimes you just send a message.
No, but I think you're completely accurate on that. He sent a message. What level of acceptance the Russians had on this? You know, Putin, remember, Putin isn't, I mean, Assad is Putin's guy. Up to the point, he's not Putin's guy. And what Putin is in this for is for his military expansion. He's got a base, and he's got a naval base.
He's got a port now?
He's got a port, and he's got an airfield. And really, if you said, okay, you know, Bashar Assad, your time has come. There's a plane leaving for Tehran. Get on it and get all your money bags on it. And we've got another guy who's going to stand up there who doesn't look quite as dorky as you do and say, hi, I'm the president of Syria, and I'm going to let the Russians keep their bases, and I'm going to get rid of all my chemical weapons and not kill my own people anymore. I don't think Putin would be upset, and I don't think any American would be too upset.
You know, and this is, it's weird to say, Osama bin Laden said something that's very prophetic about when Kuwait happened, when Saddam went in there, and then we started using Jordanian bases, this, that, and the other. He said, the minute you get the West in here, they're never going to leave. And it's the same thing with Russia. The Russians aren't going anywhere. They're inside of there. They want skin in the game. And quite frankly, the Russians don't care if it all falls apart as long as they hold a small portion of the port and a base. I've said all along, and especially over the last couple of days, I've reiterated, I don't believe that a year from now, Syria is the map that we see. I think it'll be broken up into bits and pieces.
Well, it's certainly possible. That was one of the answers that was talked about a long time ago when this began. I mean, a long time ago, this began back in 2011. That was one of the discussions of the possible outcomes of it. It was it could be basically federalized and broken up with an Alawite group, which is the base, which is the ethnicity and version of Islam that Assad and his family practice, and that they could have their own little portion of the country up in the north, and then it could be broken up factually between Sunnis and Shia for the rest of it, and maybe some of that leaning into Iraq also, and then how that gets broken up.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research here is joining us. So looking forward, we've got many, you know, this false flag thing and all this stuff. You know, you look at what the UN has come out on more than one occasion and said, look, here's the reports we have. This guy's used chemical weapons. You've got other people said, well, there's other people that say he hasn't. And it was really the, you know, it was the rebels. It was this, that, and the other. I think he did it. I think, you know, you've got Britain, Germany, France, Japan, Canada, all of them standing behind saying, look, we're looking at this. We're looking at the intelligence. We hear and see the same thing. I think it was a measured response. I think it was a right response. But then you take away what Assad did, and then you look over at Russia and go, you guys promised us he wasn't going to have any chemical weapons and he wasn't going to use them anymore when we backed down. When John Kerry told the French, turn the planes around, we're not going to do anything, and this is on your watch, how complicit were you? Because if it came at that base and they were putting them together there, you're at that base because we had to alert you to get the hell out of there. What did you know?
That's a good question, and I think that maybe by the time that thing filtered up through the chain of command, it was probably too late, and that may have been why Putin decided, okay, this guy's, you know, I've given this guy enough rope. He's hung himself. Somebody's going to want to respond. We'll let the Americans fly 60 Tomahawks in here, because with the air defense system that the Russians have set up in Syria, those missiles flew with their knowledge and with their acceptance, because they could have brought every one of those down with their air defense system.
Yeah.
So there is, I mean, the Syrian air defense system isn't that substantial, but the stuff the Russians has is top drawer. I mean, it's almost as good as ours probably. And they could have brought any of those Tomahawks down. They've got three ways to do it, either through GPS screw up, or you can basically scramble the GPS signal. They can fry the electronics in them, or they could simply shoot them down. So the Russians let those missiles go through. So they basically were acceptance of Assad had gone too far off his leash and he needed to be brought back in line.
That's it. And you know what? They have to be, you know, you think that was what do you think was a tougher phone call to take? The phone call that Trump made to Putin, and Putin knows that this is coming and what's going on, or Assad picking up the phone with Putin on the other side saying, you were a dumbass. What in God's name were you thinking? And you're on your own on this right here.
Well, I would guess it was probably neither of those. I would say it would have been the Russian general who is probably responsible for babysitting Assad and his troops, having to call the Kremlin and tell him that, sorry, he just launched a bunch of chemical weapons against his own people, and the world's going to be outraged when they find out what happened.
Yeah, we won't know about that guy because he's no longer visiting. I think that's the kind of the way they do it, the old-fashioned way like they used to in Russia. You know, or maybe just maybe, you've been relieved of your duties. 844-DIG-CHAT, 844-424-2423. Still so much stuff to get to. We got tax reform. We've got Obamacare. We've got Gorsuch, the nuclear option. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is with us. It's the Chad Benson Show.
America's funniest cisgendered privileged white male with a bully pulpit the size of a divided nation. Here's Chad Benson.
Happy Friday. Jim Kennedy from Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is with us. We're talking all things politics and fun. Jim, we jump from there to the nuclear option was exercised. We're not talking about bombs. Right move.
Yes. And you can thank Harry Reid because it was his idea originally.
You know, you look back in time and everybody thinks, you know, again, it's there's a lot of this antiquated, weird stuff, cloture and this, that. You know, that hasn't been around forever. There was a time and a day long ago when this thing originally kicked off here, this great idea, when it was an up or down, you know, who the majority wins. And then it got weirder and there was more archaic and bizarre rules. And they've just since it, you know, and then when we do something like this, this was originally kind of how it was done.
Well, correct. But also, there also was a time in the day in the Senate when the senators would beat each other with canes when they got upset. So things have differed a little bit over the last 100 years or so, 150 years. But yeah, I mean, the Democrats put McConnell in this place. There's no good reason for it. This is a gentleman, Gorsuch, that won or that was passed on a 98-0 voice vote for his appointment to the Federal Circuit Court, okay? He is eminently qualified. There is no question about that. You can't find a liberal who says that he's not qualified. He simply isn't the right person, and the left is still mad over what happened after Scalia died and the Republican Senate would not take up Obama's nominee.
You know, I said earlier, you can talk about Merrick Garland all you want. Had Hillary won, he wasn't getting a hearing either because he wasn't liberal or progressive enough for that bench. So he was a sacrificial lamb. I think the way they looked at it, the Obama administration was, we'll put Merrick Garland up. He is centrist left, definitely a Democrat, not a progressive, but a Democrat, has ruled against the left on a few occasions. But their fear factor may be, they'll go early because they're worried Hillary's going to win, so they'll give him the nomination and he'll become the next he'll take over for Scalia. But they didn't bite on that. They held strong. And this was just ridiculous that a guy who has got this big and amazing resume didn't really get a fair chance from the left. And I said to myself, Chuck Schumer, you guys are dying on a hill that it's too early to use all your ammo. And guess what? You've cried wolf now, and in 16 months, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg passes away, you guys are SOL.
Or Anthony Kennedy steps away this summer, which is a rumor also.
Yeah.
Yeah, Schumer, well, last week, when this was the inevitable outcome of this, he was sitting on the Sunday shows last weekend saying, well, Gorsuch's nomination is dead, President Trump needs to come back with a centrist nominee who everyone can support. He was 5 days away from being approved, and Schumer was still delusional enough to think that he was going to somehow make a change in this thing.
Oh, goodness me. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research joins us on this beautiful Friday. Xi Jinping is here. Trade is on the menu at Mar-a-Lago, but I think trade is going to be tied in with the miniature angry little person that is in Pyongyang, North Korea, and that, of course, is our good friend, the killer himself, Kim Jong-il.
The crazy one, yes. You know, you really have to love the symbolism of last night when he's sitting there at a dinner across from the Chinese leader while he's throwing tomahawks into Syria. You talked about the message he's sending. I wonder what the Chinese premier thought about that kind of a message. Because, see, one of the things is, you know, China wants to assume its place, what it seems to be its rightful place, as a power player in world politics. And it certainly does, for the most part, creating islands in the South Pacific notwithstanding. But the point is to grow from a regional power into a world superpower, you really have a responsibility of cleaning up your own neighborhood. You need to keep your neighborhood clean. And the Chinese really have not done that by the fact that they let the crazy guy in North Korea, the whole succession of crazy guys, whether it be it him or his dad that passed away, to allow them to have nuclear weapons. That's something that's simply not responsible. I mean, what do you think we would do if Mexico was trying to test a nuclear weapon? I think there would be a little bit more response than basically creative.
We build a bigger wall, maybe? I don't know.
We'd be out of concrete, at least.
You know what? China is living in a past. And I say that in a way that many of you are going, well, just bear with me on this. Everybody thinks World War II started on September 1st, 1939. The truth is, World War II started before that when Japan invaded China on more than numerous occasions. There is still this sense that Pyongyang and North Korea is somewhat of a buffer between South Korea and Japan. And there is still a sense of that. And that's what they look at it as. And the truth is, you're right, man. You got to clean up your own neighborhood, and that's your dog. Put a leash on him because he's crapping in everybody else's yard.
Yeah, I mean, the thing also with the Chinese is they're still looking at it also from the perspective that anybody that's annoying the Americans is good. Anyone that's sticking, you know, that's sticking a stick in the side of the Americans and making us upset or concerned is good for them because they're just looking to basically roust America in general. So they've basically kind of got to back away from that and kind of be a member of the world political order and clean up the problem and basically say, look, you've got to go, your nukes have to go, and we need to help you out. Economic, I mean, North Korea has nothing, but considering the size of the Chinese economy, you know, $5 billion, which would be a write-off to the Chinese, would probably rebuild half of North Korea because there is just nothing there, and their needs are so basic to be fulfilled that $5 billion a year would go a long way to help bring back a stable, responsible government to that country.
If you have never seen a picture of North Korea at night, I tell you, it is one of the most incredible things you'll ever see. You could just Google it. Next to it, 20, 30, 40 miles away, is Seoul. It is lit up. It is bright. It looks like Vegas on a summer night. And next to it are little dots of light. That is not the ocean. Those are not people that are out fishing in fishing boats. No, that is North Korea. They have zero infrastructure. They have nothing in that country. And it is absolutely, it is, I'm telling you guys, it is one of the craziest things. And this has to be on top of the list. Jim Kennedy's with us. Jim, I want you to stick through because I got more questions about that. Also, I want to talk about what Jerry Brown did. Even though it's in California, people are chiming in left, right, and center saying it's happening in our state. It's happening in our state. And it is absolutely ridiculous when you have one party rule what can take place. The Chad Benson Show is your Facebook, at Chad Benson Show Twitter. You could tweet at Righty Jim. Simple and easy there. Check us out on Facebook, Chad Benson Show. Also, podcast. They're amazing. First of all, they taste great. Cross between chicken and unicorn. And if you eat a podcast, it's absolutely free. In fact, we'll throw in a baker's dozen. Go to ChadBensonShow.com. Download your podcast. Simple and easy. Like I said earlier, we are the paleo diet of the talk radio world. Whoa, Chad. Whoa. Jim Kennedy's going to stick with us here. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Chad Benson Show.
Independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Happy Friday. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is in studios. We talk all things politics. Before we were so rudely interrupted, China's a big economic player. And I tried to explain to people over and over again, the people don't understand how much China has painted themselves into a corner with the way that they have melded communism and capitalism. Capitalism is the greatest equalizer, and it is the thing that will bring more people out of poverty than anything else, and it will also destroy things like communism, and it has before. And while a lot of people worry about our debt, the truth is they need us far more than we need them because their regime will fall. We might just say, pfft.
Well, yeah, they're basically, I mean, people are talking today about the number of jobs that were created in America. It was only like 98,000, and we need to really create 150,000 to 200,000 a month. Well, the Chinese economy, because of the demographics and its size, they need to create like 1 million jobs a month. Okay, so they got to keep that economic engine revving, and that's on a number that's got a lower GDP than we do. So they need to create over 4 to 5 times as many jobs as we do with a lower economic output. So they've got to keep that engine going, or they're going to run into lots of troubles. And you talked about it's capitalism in China that has raised millions and millions of people out of poverty and brought a middle class into China that never existed. Now, I can talk about how a middle class is going to work with an authoritarian government. That's a good question going forward and how that's going to be a problem.
Because when people, like, you look back at Tiananmen Square, people had no freedom. China was cracking down on everybody. There was no economic mobility. You were basically SOL there. They gave them freedoms, and they've tasted a bit of it. If they think they could take it away from them, they're going to find out. Look, we put up with your crap of not being able to see what we want to see on the internet at times and some of the stuff that you guys do, telling us who we could vote for, give us the only these choices. Now you take away our cash. Guess what? We're going to turn.
Well, no, absolutely. But also remember, they started part of the agreement, shall we say, if you can call it that, at the end of the Tiananmen Square and that whole uprising was some basic property reforms where people could farm some of their own property, a couple of acres or a certain proportion of it. And the Chinese government started seeing how much more productive those little acreages were than state farms. And they saw the effects of capitalism, the fact that when you have competition, when you have the ability to basically people to improve themselves, rather than look at Russia. I mean, you know, the old joke about the Russians where they grew more than enough produce to and more than enough food to feed the people, but only half of it would make it to market before it rot on the roads because the infrastructure was so bad, transportation was so bad, and there was no incentive. So if a whole truckload of produce rotted on the road, what did it matter? But your whole truckloads of produce rots, and you're a farmer, that's money out of your pocket.
Yeah.
When you have a competitive capitalist system, you have incentives, you have a profit motive, you have a reason to do something rather than, well, okay, so it doesn't get to market, I don't get fired, I go back next week and get another truckload of stuff and try to get it to market before it rots.
Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute for Public Policy Research is here with us. All right, Jim, we switched from there to the insanity. I was talking earlier about Jerry Brown, what California's done. But you can insert state after state into this. And the Republicans are even guilty of this on a few occasions, which is you have some one-party rule, and they decide to do whatever they need to do to make everybody happy inside of the party and to pay for their little pet projects. And California's done it by essentially, you know, saying, hey, we're not even going to ask you anymore. We're just going to reach in and grab more money out of you to pay for the stuff that you've already paid for.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And by the way, it's not Jerry Brown. It is Governor Moonbeam 2.0.
Yes.
Is the proper phrasing for his holiness. Well, yes, because we have a gas tax in California. Every time you go to the gas station, you pay a part of that gallon that goes into your car or the 12 gallons or whatever, you pay a tax on that. And you pay a road use fee and stuff like that that goes to the state of California for maintaining the roads. And if you're an electric car, well, you don't. But guess what? Jerry's going to catch up with you anyway. That goes to paying for the roads. So why do we need an increase in the gas tax? By the way, California already had the fourth highest gas tax in the nation. Courtesy Jerry Brown, now we have the highest gas tax in the nation. Thank you very much.
And we have expensive gas because people forget, just because we have the gas tax, most people don't understand that we have different blends that cause a spike
higher
in prices.
Higher cost of manufacturing.
Because of supply and demand during certain times of the year. So we already have expensive gas. Now we've got super double expensive gas.
Right, and it just keeps going up, and if your middle class is going to hurt you even more. But the point is on the gas taxes, there's already been money that's been going into this for years and years and years to pay for roads. But the state of California, because of the way that it's been running its books, which is somewhat crooked, has been taking the money out of that. And then they pass a bill and say, okay, you know what? We're going to stop this. We're going to pass an amendment that keeps us from stealing this money, but we need you to give us more money to refund it or to put more money back into the fund. And then 10 years down the road, they find out they've been stealing the money through some other method. And they say, you know what? Okay, we're wrong. We're going to pass an amendment that says we can't steal it this way either. And we need more taxes to put money back into the fund. And it's just a recurring cycle that they go through in California, where they're basically just trying to steal it. Now, California, because of the fact we do have, as you talked about, a one majority rule in the sense that the Democrats have enough votes in both the state Senate and the state assembly to pass tax measures, which require 2/3 vote. With only Democratic votes. Now, the problem was they got help from a Republican in this. Anthony Canella, who's a Republican from the Merced Modesto area, capitulated because he was given a $500 million bill that will give $500 million to his district so that he can create an extension of the high-speed rail, or as I prefer to call it, the crazy train that will never happen, to an extension that will bring it into Merced, that where it was not originally going to go. So a Republican helped and capitulated to the Democrats to give them this insane tax, which they're just going to steal from the California people anyway.
Talking to Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research, and this is the craziness. It's happening in every city and states across the country where you have no idea why they keep asking you for more money, whether it be for school or for roads or this, that, and the other. And you look up and you think to yourself, sweet mother of God, didn't we just pay for this? Why do I have to pay for this again? You're charging me twice. Yeah, well, you know what? You're an idiot for continuing to put them into power. And we've got to figure out a way to redistrict. Too many gerrymandering going on, too much of this stuff. There's got to be an opportunity out there. Now, California, it doesn't matter what we do, really. I mean, minus a few small enclaves, it's we know where it's going. But nationwide, this is insane the way that these people are entrenched in their positions, whether it's at the state level or whether it's at a federal level.
Well, in the congressional districts, you're correct. The Republicans, about 10 or 15 years ago, recognized that the way to help them increase their numbers and maybe and help them attain a majority in that Congress was to start going after the secretaries of state's office, because many times those are the groups that have say in redistricting after censuses are done, and they can help gerrymander or redraw the districts that would be more favorable to the Republicans. Democrats only have 5 states in this country where they've got both a majority in the legislatures and they have a governorship. But at least the Republicans, to somewhat give them a break, when they have a majority and they also own the governor's mansion. Remember, they're not going to generally be coming at you for taxes. They're going to be passing their bathroom bills and their things like that, which on the social side, and they'll cut taxes. Whereas the Democrats want your pocketbook. They want your money so they can spend it. Because remember, Democrats have a belief that they know how to spend the money better than you do, and that's why they should be given all their money. Democrats give you back what they think that the state doesn't need. Republicans take what from you what they think they need to minimally run a state. Different bit of philosophy there.
Absolutely. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is joining us here. So, got about 2-3 minutes here. I want to talk quickly. Taxes and Obamacare, which one gets done first?
That's a good question. It may be Obamacare. They've come up, they're going back. Now, remember, we're talking about a Congress that I believe is going to be working, 4 days between now and the end of April?
Well,
for their spring break.
They're very busy.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really want to overtax their bill. I mean, they did pass the Supreme Court nominee. God bless them for that. And they, I don't know, they did something else. I don't know what they did. Oh, they haven't done anything, actually. Sorry, I was wrong. Yeah, I would say they could possibly possibly draw up a health care bill that will be, they'll have enough of the mandates broken in Obamacare. The Conservative Caucus, the Freedom Caucus, wanted 4 mandates removed from the original Obamacare bill, and the original bill only had 2. So if you throw them 2 more mandate removals, you may get enough of the Freedom Caucus to back the bill. And Trump, being the art of the deal, the master negotiator, may be able to make that come off, and we may get some minimal version of health care reform to come in before the taxes.
What about speaking of taxes? I mean, taxes are – we had Chip Roy on here yesterday talking about taxes, and I look at taxes. I think we haven't had meaningful tax legislation 28 plus years, 30 years, where we haven't really had, you know, corporate tax, looking at across the board. We need a change. And, you know, the burden is too much on our shoulders. And what are we getting for any of this stuff?
Well, we have a broken corporate tax system.
Yeah.
We had some tax reform in the early days of the Bush administration, on the personal lines for some tax cuts. But corporate tax reform is very, very necessary, because the corporations, through the loopholes through European countries and trade deals and so on, and tax deals, have been able to park a lot of their money offshore. Apple's got close, I don't know, $300 or $400 billion offshore. There's almost $1 trillion, my understanding is, for all of these, mostly high tech companies, because of the way their business works, are able to hide this money offshore. The problem is, if they ever bring it back, they're going to have to pay the full tax rate on it. America has the highest nominal corporate tax rate in the world right now, 35%. If you told Apple and cut them a deal, tell you what, we're going to lower the corporate tax rate to, say, 22.5%. And anything that you guys are holding offshore, you're bringing back at a 15% rate, but you got to put it into new jobs and plant and equipment in America. And we'll bring in, you know, $50 to $100 billion or maybe a little bit more in a one-time boost to a bump to the economy. And you'll get all that money back on shore. They'll be able to be used for jobs and for building.
Would they do that, though? That's the therein lies the thing. You know, you hear, well, you know, if we give them a one-time opportunity, how many of them are, you know, Google's the same way. They've got so much money offshore. How many of them have gone to park money in Ireland? Because they're thinking to themselves, well, why should we now? We're set up. You guys missed that train a long time ago.
Well, because they still need to get that money back. They've got Apple, while it's got a huge cash hoard, has also been racking up, not troubling debt, because they basically just borrow against the future day when they bring that money back. So that costs them a little bit of money in a couple percentage points in that debt. It doesn't help the balance sheet either. It looks a little screwy too to investors. They understand it, but it's just a little screwy. If I've got I've got $300 billion in cash, but I got to borrow $150 billion in cash. Why? You got $300 billion? Well, because I can't bring it home because I have to pay the taxes on it. So it helped them clean up their balance sheets, and it certainly would look good. It would also, as part of this, so remember, you're going to do tax reform with this, and you're going to prevent these types of things from going forward. So you give them the benefit of making them only pay 15% to bring it back, while you're getting them on board, hopefully backing any sort of tax legislation from a Chamber of Commerce perspective.
His name's Jim Kennedy. You can check him out on Twitter at Righty Jim. As always, my man, it's good to hear you here on a Friday. Wrap it up, Straight Ahead, Chad Benson Show.
Chad Benson. He's more popular in France than Jerry Lewis.
Well, we all knew that. He's still alive, right, Jerry?
Yeah, because that
somebody
film
yelled at me yesterday.
Released.
His what?
That film, the clown film, hasn't been released.
Oh, yeah. Man, because you know me, I'm the touch of death for old celebrities. The minute I say something, they usually kick over. Yesterday was the day before the other day. We killed, because you and I were talking about Phil, right? We killed the dude from Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Yeah, exactly.
He's 91. That's Jerry Lewis, not the guy from Trans-Siberian. He got to like 60. Paul O'Neill. So, and I said Betty White, Bob Barker. Who are some other ones that are up there?
I've actually met Paul O'Neill.
Did you?
I did, and a great guy, and again, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, the musicians out of the show.
Yeah. I'm telling you what, guys. I hope I don't. People are like, don't say Betty White. I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't mean anything bad. I don't think I'm going to kill her. But we do tend to apparently be the guys that kind of, kill these people off. I don't know. I hope
you can say Nicki Minaj.
I like Nicki. I got nothing against Nicki. I got nothing against her. Nothing. It's mostly the old celebrities. Now, you said Richard Gere earlier, Anthony, so... He's 67, but, you know, we tend to, look, our touch works in the 60s up, all right? Anything in the 50s, you know, you're all right. Primate or human? I'm a woggly girl in the West Indian town of Mowgli, which is right near Hogwarts, apparently, was found living in the forest, wild, with monkeys. And she was behaving like a primate. The young girl's been discovered in the forest in the northern India town. She said she is believed to be between 10 and 12. She was found naked, emaciated, in the Kantagrigat forest, in the Uttar Prashraj. Somebody's going to say, oh, my God, I can't believe you said that wrong. Don't get mad at me. It's an accent. It's not a race. It's not. They don't know. She's walking on two limbs now. The animals themselves were not thrilled by them taking her away. Originally, they chased the people off. The cops showed up, you know, and the monkeys are like, quick, the fuzz is here. Let's get out of here. And they got her. And we were trying to figure out because, you know, obviously she wasn't raised by them. But she'd been out there for a while. She's been in the hospital for the last 2 months. Well, I'm assuming... She had to have been out there for a few years, probably. And, you know, she probably had a home at one time. And, you know, who knows what will happen. I mean, again, you know, this, it's not like they keep great records.
Yeah.
Bandon, you know, you look. I mean, was that movie Lion, right? You know, that just happens. You know, you got 28 of them, and you're like, it is what it is. Now we got 26. Oh, Olivia de Havilland is 100 years old. Yeah, I remember her. Yeah, so she's probably next on the list here. Chad's death march. So horrible, Chad. Solid fun show today, as always, kids and kittens. We've got many mediums of which you can reach us at. Chad Benson Show is your Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter. You can text us always. Comes right to me, actually. Special number and phone just for that. 323-538-2423. Program, if you want to do it old-fashioned style, chat at chadbensonshow.com. And yes, you can check out the podcast. We're giving that to you because we love you. And if you act now, says Ronco, we're going to throw in all the podcasts you want for free at chadbensonshow.com. Solid, fun week. God only knows what the weekend's going to have in store for us, because you just never know with this president, this administration. I'm sure it'll be good. For Anthony, for Phil, you guys have a safe and wonderful weekend. Back at it Monday. As always, my good friends. Night-night, Jack.
This is the Chad Benson Show.